It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the Sporticos Football Stories podcast. My name is Craig Hansen, and today I'm joined by Sam Blakey, a Sunderland fan and contributor to the Roker Report, an SB Nation Sunderland fan site, and its podcast, the Roker Rapport. Sam is on the pod today to talk us through the ups and downs of following one of English football's most historic clubs during one of its most tumultuous periods. From finishing 10th in the Premier League just a decade ago to a double relegation to League One, the Netflix documentary Sunderland Till I Die, playoff near misses, and much more. I can't wait to get into all of that on today's episode of the Sporticos Football Stories podcast. Hello, Sam. How are you doing?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Not too bad. Thank you so much for coming on to join us today, Sam. It's a pleasure to have you. And the first thing we want to get into, as always, as we always do on the show, is a little bit about your story of becoming a Sunderland fan. Could you walk me through sort of your earliest memories of following the team and how that came about?
Well, it was weird because I've never really thought about it. I had to actually, for the first time, think about it and try and note it down. It's one of those where it's like you can't remember anything other than going to the matches, being a fan, but it's just one of those where your dad does it and it was never going to be that you don't do it or support anyone else, really. One thing I do remember is, I think it was 2008, so I'll have been 10, and I wasn't that bothered about going to the match. I'd been a few times, but it was like I wasn't interested. I was happy not going. And we beat the Mags at home. We beat Newcastle 2-1. I want to say it was the first time in like 8 years we'd beat them. And I was the only one out, my friends, not to be there. And like going into school and hearing them all talk about it, that's when I was like, I've got to start going now. So I think I've had a season ticket for about 12 years now, 11, 12 years.
Oh, wow. So you're a little bit younger than me then. So you're probably about, are you about 20 then? 22. Yeah, we're about a decade apart. So I was going to ask you, because I wasn't sure from your picture, but you're definitely a Stadium of Light guy, right? You definitely weren't alive for the Roker Park or anything like that.
No, I want to say the Stadium of Light opened the year I was born, so I didn't get experience Roker Park or anything, which is a shame, but my dad and everyone's got great memories of it.
Is it still there? Because I don't, obviously, being a non-fan, I don't know much about it. Is there,
no,
did they knock
it's
it down?
Not. It's like, yeah, it's like flats and that now.
Okay, well, that's a shame. But you've got beautiful stadium now. I mean, Stadium of Light's one of the, you know, most beautiful, great stadiums in the country.
Yeah.
Could you remember then You told us that story of sort of being jealous of your friends at school talking about how they'd gone. Had you been to a game before that? Can you remember your first game that you ever went to there?
Yeah, it was weird because I Googled it yesterday and I still am unsure because I remember it was against Arsenal at home and I remember Henry scoring and I thought in my head it was either 3 or 4-0. And when I've Googled it, there's back-to-back seasons where we've lost 3-0 and then 4-0. So I'm starting to think I've either been to both and merged them together or I've been to one. So I think you're talking like 2005, 2006, while well, I've been about 7. I vaguely remember Henry bending one in the corner and their fans not even really celebrating because it was like 4-0 at the time.
How old would you have been then, do you think?
7. Maybe 8.
About 7. So it's not that blurry then, because sometimes we talk to people and, you know, they say they were like 1. So you got a bit of a memory. Do you remember how you felt when you first... I mean, I think for me, one of the kind of... how could I say it? One of the things that sticks with you the most is when you first walk up like the steps and you see the pitch, even if it's a like little ground or a big ground. Do you remember how that felt going to a proper live football match for the first time?
I sort of remember, you know, the typical walking out from the stands, where walking up to the stands and you see the massive pitch, you see the massive stadium as a kid. It's a bit overwhelming. I remember all that. I was thinking about it earlier, and my first game, I was trying to Google it because, you know, when you sort of, you don't know the year and stuff, but you know little things in your mind, and I was thinking, I know it was Arsenal at home, I know Henry scored, and I know it was either 3 or 4-0, and when I've Googled it, we actually had back-to-back seasons at home against Arsenal with Henry scoring where we lost 3-0 and then 4-0, so I can't work out whether I've been to both and merged them together, or I've been to one, and I can't remember which one it was, but I'm guessing it was 2006, so I'll have been 7, 8, I think. So that's like my earliest memory, but it was one of those where my dad, from going to the matches, my dad's always had the same group of mates he goes with, so at the time I couldn't get a ticket with him, so my mum took us and we were in the ground like an hour early. You're walking out. I remember walking out. You see, like, you know, the sprinklers, players passing the ball around and stuff. And you've got the music on the background. I still remember that to this day. Yeah, definitely.
And do you remember sort of how the club were getting on back then in your earliest days of fandom? Because I suppose that they were in the Premier League. And I think there's about a decade between us. So I think I remember more or less how you were getting on. But from your perspective, how would you say the team was performing back then, and who were the like standout players that caught your attention?
The sad thing for me is, again, obviously, I know most, if you got an older Sunderland fan on, that straight away go to Quinn and Phillips, because they were unbelievable, especially, you know, Kevin Phillips is a cult hero up here. Sometimes you see him in town, he goes on a night out and he'd never have to buy a drink ever up here, and he wouldn't be able to drink it because everyone wants a photo with him because it's super Kev. But I was just after Quinn and Phillips. I'd never seen them play. So the closest I can think, really, is it didn't end well. So it's sad to say it, but Darren Bent, for me, when I first started going, Darren Bent was scoring goals for fun. He was lightning quick. He would score good goals. He'd score tap-ins. He'd celebrate every time with the fans. I loved Darren Bent, but obviously that ended a bit sourly. He went to Villa. There was question marks over why he went. Money, England. So sad the way that ended. But to be totally honest, Darren Bent was one of my heroes growing up. But no, we had a good team back then. Obviously, I'm jumping the gun a bit from like 2008. But from when I properly remember going, it was, we had like Bent. I remember we played Chelsea away on a Monday night, I want to say, under Steve Bruce, and we beat them 3-0 at Stamford Bridge, and we just passed them off the park. And I was thinking back to that team now, and we had Jordan Henderson, Darren Bent, Asamoah, Danny Welbeck on loan from Man U, who was like 19, the next big thing, Bolo Zenden. It was an unbelievable team looking back. Obviously, like, them players are all in the early development, but you look well at what they've gone on to do, and it was just scary, the team we had not even that long ago, maybe 10 years ago compared to where we are now. But no, I have real good memories of first supporting the club,
especially, really. It's mad to think it was normal for us to sort of finish 10th or 11th, or if we finish lower than that, want a manager out. It's crazy thinking back to how far we've, well, fallen, so to speak.
And what was it like as a school kid then in Sunderland back then? Because I know that, you know, at least where I'm from in the Midlands, and I think in a lot of places in the country, even back in my day, which is probably about 10 years before yours, there was a lot of glory hunting, a lot of Man United fans, a lot of Liverpool fans. My stories, which I've been over on the podcast loads of times and we don't need to go over again, is a little bit unique. But it seems like, you know, you do get, in the UK, you get people following their local teams a lot more, I would say, than in some other countries that I've lived in. But there's still, you know, especially among little kids, there's a lot of following, you know, the whoever's the big team at the time. What was it like for you at school? Did everyone pretty much follow Sunderland, or did you have a lot of glory hunters and a lot of that kind of stuff going on, or is that just not done in the northeast?
The thing is, when I think back to school, it was like, it was weird. It was almost, you like football, so you're a Sunderland fan, or you don't like football. You sort of, you had the odd person piping up saying, oh, I'm a Man U fan or whatever, but he was almost like discarded. It was like, well, you know, a proper football fan, than I, unless it was like he's from there or has a genuine reason. But if someone pipes up and just says, no, I'm a Liverpool fan, Gerrard, whatever, you just, people say, oh, well, we're talking about Sunderland, we're proper fans, do you know what I mean? Like, it was almost, you liked football, you went to the match, that's what you did, or you didn't like football. It was weird. But I know, obviously, I know people's memories from school, and like everyone supports Man U, Liverpool and stuff. Honestly, my memory was just Sunderland. Like, you might have had the odd mag, but they would usually keep their heads down unless they were one of the hard kids. But no, going back to the earlier question of why you started, why I started going. It was 2008, and we beat the Mags. We beat Newcastle at home 2-1. And I won us under Roy Keane. I think it was the first time we'd beat them in 8 years or something. First time I beat them at home for ages, and I wasn't there. And the reaction to that game with everyone in school, my dad's friends talking about it, I was like, I can't miss out on something like this. So I started going because of that, really. And I've never looked back. Like, it's just, like I say, it's what you do. Like, it's just Saturday at 3 o'clock, you're at the match, or you're watching the match, thinking about the match. But unlucky for me, so I missed that 2008 derby, which was a great day, Kieran Richardson free kick. And instead, my first derby was at home, and we lost, Newcastle beat us 1-0. And that was actually the last time that they managed to beat us, over 10 years ago. So just thought I'd throw that in there, because that's a nice little stat that I like to keep at hand.
Let's talk about derbies now. So, can you remember the first derby that you went to between you and Newcastle? How intense is that derby? Because from where we're, you know, the rest of the country, from where we're standing, it looks like it's pretty big, but it's hard to know unless you're from there, you know what I mean? So could you sort of give us a little bit about the energy of that, like how intense really is it? And then where do Middlesbrough fit in with all of that? Because is that a big derby? Which one's bigger? Is it sort of Middlesbrough Newcastle, Middlesbrough Sunderland, Sunderland Newcastle? Which is the biggest one of those sort of northeast derbies?
No, Middlesbrough aren't even like, Middlesbrough is sort of that little annoying cousin or brother who's a bit younger and wants to tag along, and you've just got to kind of like take him out when your mum tells you to. Nah, he's, don't get us wrong, I've been to Borough away, and it's a big game when you're there, because obviously their fans are going mental, but it's not on the same scale as Sunderland Newcastle, not at all. And I think it's possibly the only thing we'll see eye to eye on with Newcastle fans, is that it's not the same scale when we play Borough and when they play Borough. I think something that'll sum it up for you is, I can't remember what year, but you're going back a while, and Middlesbrough were in the Championship, and they were in, and we were in the Premier League, and they were in the playoff final against Norwich. I think they lost 2-0. It was when like Nathan Redmond, Cameron Jerome were playing, I think, And me and my dad were watching that match actually wanting Burrett to win, because our logic was, well, it's a close away game for next season. Whereas, can you imagine if we were in the Premier League, the Mags were in the Championship, there's no way I'd want them to win. I'd have the shirt on of whoever they were playing. So I think it's, like I say, it's a big game when you play them, and you do want to beat them because they're local, but it's totally different feeling to do it like to the Newcastle game. I hate the derbies. Like, it's weird when I talk to Sunderland fans, and I'm sure Newcastle are the same. You either sort of love Derby Day or you hate it, and I'm very much hate it. Like, we're doing well in the Carabao Cup at the moment as we're recording this. We'll just be Wigan away last night to reach the last 16, and Newcastle aren't in the cup. But when they were, a lot of Sunderland fans wanted us to draw them, and I couldn't think of anything worse. Like, I get what some of our fans are saying. Look, we're a League One team, they're Premier League, it's a free hit. But I couldn't stand them beating us and watching someone like St Maximin celebrate and do a dance. And I couldn't think of anything worse. The longer we can go without playing them, so I can say you haven't beat us in 10 years, 6 in a row, whatever, that'll do me. That's the only bragging rights we have, so I'd like to keep hold of them for as long as possible. But one of the biggest memories I have, I was thinking back and I've made a few notes and looking back to do this, and like, I've got so many good memories of being in the Premier League. Like, I've seen us, well, not just Premier League, I've seen us at Wembley 3 times. I've seen us beat Man United away and Chelsea away in the space of a week. I went to both games to stay up, but I went to St James's Park for the first time in 2015-14, and we won 1-0. Adam Johnson scored in the 90th minute, and when the ball hit the net, I've never seen anything like it. It was just, you'd think we'd won like the Champions League or something. And taking it in isolation to a fan who doesn't quite understand the thing, if they saw them scenes, they'd think, well, you've only won 3 points, but that's how much it means to beat them lot. And they would be the same with us, and that's probably my best memory supporting Sunderland, is that game at St James's when Johnson scored and we won 1-0. It was just incredible. Taking it in isolation, you would have thought we'd won a cup or something. It was that important and that memorable to every single fan there. It was unbelievable. I think that was to make it 4 in a row, 5 in a row. So, no, that was it. That was unbelievable.
And what was it about the club that had such an impact on you when you were a kid that's kept you following them all the way up to now in adulthood? Because a lot of people are, I wouldn't say a lot of people, but some people, they sort of go through dips, you know what I mean? And they're really into it when they're a kid, and maybe they drop off, maybe they leave the area to go to uni, or they get into other stuff, you know what I mean? But it seems like you're very much into it, you know, intensely so. What was it that about the club that kind of hooked you in that way, do you think?
You sort of just, it's not one of those like classic stories with football where you fall in love with it. Like I was saying, when I've got me earliest memory of walking up and seeing the stadium for the first time, seeing the pitch, I didn't necessarily fall in love with it, because from what I remember anyway, I enjoyed it, but I sort of more seen it as a day out with me mum or with me dad. But once I started going properly in 2009-10, you just don't look back, and it's like a culture thing. Like, there's people, obviously, I don't see on a daily basis, maybe once a week, once a month, whatever. The first thing you're talking about is the club and what's going on, no matter if we're in the Premier League, Championship, League One, we could be in League Two, and it would be the first topic of conversation. It's the way it is, really. It's like town, like driving through town on a match day and seeing the place buzzing. It just sucks you in, and you want to be a part of it. You don't want to miss out, and I couldn't think of anything else I'd rather do on a Saturday, even if we're in, like I say, we could be in League Two, bottom, could have lost 20 games in a row, and Saturday at 3 o'clock, you'd have God knows how many people at the stadium are like waiting to see their team, because that's all they know and that's all they're ever going to know, and they wouldn't have it any other way.
And now, not just talking about the... We talked a bit about the derby that you have with Newcastle and how intense that is, but how would you describe the fan base in general on a general weekly basis? Would you... You know, when you hear the name of a club, sometimes they have like a clear connotation with the fans. You know, if you hear Millwall, something comes into your head. If you hear Brighton, something comes into your head. If you hear Galatasaray, something comes into your head. What do you think it is with Sunderland? How would you sort of sum up the identity of the club and its fans? What type of club do you think it is, and what type of fan base is it?
I was thinking about this actually, and if I had to use a word to describe the fan base, it's sort of, you can take it as a negative or a positive, and it's intense. And it works both ways. I'm sure ex-players or current players will tell you as well, where, like, I'm sure it probably came across in the documentary, but if you're not performing with a Sunderland shirt on and you're half-arsing it and we're getting beat and you're not trying and it's obvious you want to be away, I couldn't care less. It's probably one of the worst... I couldn't think of a worse place to be for a player. But on the flip side, if you're giving 110% every week and giving the fans something to get behind, I'm sure players will agree and say it's possibly the best place to play. Like... the North East is just so wrapped up in football, and that's the way it is. That's like, I was watching the Newcastle game, they played Leeds last Friday or something, and obviously you've got 50,000 fans there. It's home to Leeds, who were in the Championship not long ago. They were letting Leeds have all the possession, and then like a sliding tackle comes in from Newcastle player, and the noise is incredible. It's like a goal, and it's the same at the stadium. We could have the worst player in our history kind of kick a ball, but if he's going to run his arse off to the point where he can't walk and he's sliding in for challenges and not giving up, we're going to want him to be captain. Do you know what I mean? That's just the way it is. So I think if I was a player, I think I would thrive on something like that, because it's one of those where you give 110%, you're going to be rewarded. Obviously, it depends what the team's doing and whether the team's doing well. But the proper fans that I know, and I'd like to think I know them, will back a player who's given it 110%. Because, like I say, over the last 5 years before League One, we've had players who couldn't care less. So it's just nice to see players who want to be here and who realise they're lucky to be at a club like Sunderland.
Okay, and now we need to talk about the elephant in the room. I'm sure you've been asked about this a million times. I'm sure you're sick to death of talking about it, but I haven't heard any Sunderland fans talk about it. You know, I haven't met any and actually spoken to them about it, so I'm desperate to talk to you about this. And that is the Netflix documentary, Sunderland Till I Die. Now, as a big football fan, I've watched a bunch of these. I remember the first one was actually another Netflix one, the Juventus one. I can't remember what it's called, but it's a really good one. And I watched the Leeds one, the Man City one, the Spurs one. I can't wait for the Arsenal one. That's going to be pretty entertaining. But overall, I think that the Sunderland Netflix one was the best one that I've seen. Thought it was fantastic, really insightful, really interesting to watch. But from your point of view as a fan, what did you make of it? How accurate was it? Do you think it was fair? Do you think it were, and was it entertaining to watch from your end?
The documentary is a weird one, because the one thing I will say is, from a Sunderland fan's point of view, or maybe it's just me, but I'd assume it's everyone, season two is a lot easier to watch than season one, which might be surprising because obviously it ends with us not getting promoted. But season one was just like, you couldn't write a documentary like that, could you really? I mean, Netflix have came in and give the club a contract. And for that first season, they're probably thinking, they'll give it a good shot getting promoted. We might see a playoff race. And instead, we finished dead bottom of the Championship. And then the next season, we haven't got promoted. We've been to Wembley twice and took over London. And still, you've got the fans disappointed. I mean, you couldn't write it really, and I understand, to be fair, from a neutral point of view, why it's an entertaining documentary, do you know what I mean? But like I say, from a Sunderland fan's point of view, I enjoyed season two a hell of a lot more than season one, because it's like season one, within the first couple of episodes, you've got players saying stuff like, oh, well, we need to get playoffs at least, we need to be back up where this club belongs, and I just turn it off because obviously we all know how that season ends. It's like, you couldn't be far, further from the truth if you tried. But I do film and media at uni, so from like a documentary point of view, if I'm being completely neutral, it is a good documentary, isn't it? Like, it's just, like you were saying about the other documentaries I've watched, I've watched the City one, a bit of the Leeds one, the Spurs one. It's just mad, like, it's weird seeing these, like, seeing behind the scenes and in a dressing room and, like, players after a match, because sometimes as a fan you don't think of stuff like that. You see them walk off the pitch and you're booing them off and you don't think they're sitting in a dressing room furious with people and things like that. So I think it's nice to see a bit inside, but no, personally not the biggest fan, especially of the first season, for obvious reasons, yeah.
And one of the key talking points that came from the documentary, and I mean there were a load of them, I seem to remember some situations with some players getting drunk and not turning up for training, all of the drama with like the different chief executives and owners or whatever, and managers. I think in the second season you had that mad guy who was coming in and changing the music at the beginning. That was a whole thing. But I think the biggest thing that stuck with a load of football fans was the Jack Rodwell thing. I mean, I thought that was pretty sort of, it was a stark reminder, I suppose, of what football can be and how different it is to what we imagine. But what did you make of that whole thing? Do you think that it was a fair representation of the situation? How did it make you feel? I mean, I'm really interested to know, as an actual fan of the club, what you made of that whole Jack Rodwell contract situation.
I think it just disappointed, really. Like, I remember it happening at the time, obviously, before the documentary came out, like, while it was going on, and where's Rodwell? And, like, you hear rumours, and it's like, oh, he doesn't want to play. But you're kind of, like, you're sort of giving him the benefit of the doubt and being like, nah, players wouldn't do that, do you know what I mean? Like, players want to play football, he wouldn't do that to the club, he's paying his wages. But then you watch the documentary, and I was just like, oh, so he just didn't want to play, he didn't care, it's sad to see, because, like, it's his job, it's his profession. Like, we wouldn't last 2 minutes doing that in our jobs, do you know what I mean? And that's where you feel a disconnect from your club sometimes, players like him. And I'm sort of pleased in a way the documentary showed him up for what he was. It's football, though. He was always going to get off the new contract. I think he went to Sheffield United. I know he's not done anything, but it's sad, isn't it? Because I remember when we signed Rodwell, we thought we were getting this, like, English box-to-box centre midfielder who's going to rejuvenate his career. And it's like, it's sad that, like, sometimes a football player just doesn't have motivation and just gets the hump for whatever reason and realises he has more power than he should. It's just sad to see, but disappointed with the Rodwell situation. I could use worse words, but luckily it's been a few years, so I can just sum it up with disappointment.
Now, this question sort of could depend, I suppose, on where you stand. I mean, most of the people we've interviewed, I think all the people we've interviewed so far have been from top flight clubs, either in the Premier League or in other countries. I mean, I think Brighton is the sort of lowest down the pyramid we've had, and they're a Premier League club. So being a League One club, it's a totally different thing. Now, maybe you won't see it this way, but I often think that when you're, I don't know, I imagine, you know, just being the fan of a top club who wins the league every year and blah, 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 it must get boring, you know, like to be, for example, you know, when Celtic won the league 9 times in a row, I just feel like, why would you be going? You know what I mean? At this point, just so boring. Do you actually find that being a Sunderland fan nowadays could actually be pretty interesting, because you've got something to strive for, you got targets to aim for, promotion, you want to get back to the Premier League, you're a long way away. That's like a long project to stick with, to keep going, following the team. Hopefully they'll get there. I mean, is that better than just sort of being 15th every year in the Premier League? I know you're playing the big teams, but there's nothing really to go for, is there? I mean, that's maybe it's my point of view because I follow a Premier League team, but sometimes I do think I'd probably be more invested actually if there was a bit more jeopardy. But what's your take on that as a Sunderland fan?
It's a really interesting one because, like, every season the answer sort of changes. Like, the first season in League One was honestly up there with 2014 for being my favourite season supporting Sunderland. And in 2014, we got to Wembley, we beat Newcastle twice, and I went to Man U away, Chelsea away, and we won to stay up. So the fact that that's maybe on par with a season in League One that didn't end in promotion and that ended in a Checker Trade Trophy final defeat sums it up, because it was just nice to, like, play, like, give it the big one for a change. I know that sounds a bit like, I don't know what the word is, but, like, full of ourselves. But it wasn't, it was like, it was nice to go to, like, Blackpool away, take 8,000 fans. Like, I know you're saying you're a Walsall fan. I went to Walsall the first season in League One and we took half the ground and we had 10 men and we drew 2-2 at the end, and it was like there was fans on the pitch. It was mental, like, to get a point away at Walsall. But that's how much the club means to people. And it's getting different now. Obviously, the first season was like, so it felt like a bit of a free hit, like, oh, it's a bit, it was just different. But I think every fan thought we were going to have a laugh and get promoted. But once you're stuck in this league for a few years, it really starts to drain on you. Like, it's just, it's hard for us being in this league because I feel like our fans can't win sometimes. If we just, like, look down on our noses as teams, people think we're arrogant and expect to not be where we are, can't accept where we are. But, like, if we celebrate when we're top of the league, it's like, you're Sunderland, what you're celebrating for, beating Accrington Stanley. Like, it's sort of a rock, but you're between a rock and a hard place sometimes. I remember, I think it was 2 years ago, Joey Barton, obviously he's not the best person to reference, but we'll do it anyway. He was manager of Fleetwood, and Fleetwood were beating us 2-1 at the Stadium of Light. And Max Power equalised last kick of the game to make it 2-2, just to get a point against Fleetwood. We should have got all three, but we celebrated like every fan would, equalising in the 95th minute. And Joey Barton took great pleasure in his interview after the match, saying it was nice to see Sunderland celebrating like they'd won the World Cup, rescuing a point against little old Fleetwood. So, shows you how intelligent Joey Barton is, thinking that Sunderland are in the World Cup, like. But no. It's, like I said, the more we've been stuck in League One, the more you just can't be bothered with it. But this season, obviously, you're sort of taking it with a pinch of salt, the support, because a lot of it might be down to the fact that fans haven't been able to go for 18 months, and obviously everyone knows the situation. So the fact that we're back in packed stadiums, it's still got that sort of excitement to it because it hasn't happened in a while. But the fact we're getting 30,000 fans on average in League One at home is, it's amazing in my opinion. Like, you see on Twitter after the match days when we're at home, you'll see like EFL top attendances this weekend, and we're at the top by quite a bit, and we're not even in the highest league in the EFL. So, it's nice to see. Like, it's nice to see the fans get behind the team, because we've been taken over by a young lad, Kirill Louis Dreyfus. He's 23, which is really young for an owner, especially when you're not from this country, like, taking over a club like Sunderland. But by all accounts, he knows what he's doing. He's putting structures in place. We've had a really good transfer window from the outside looking in. We've sort of changed our transfer strategy. We're not going for so-called league. We haven't gone for so-called League One journeymen. We've gone for, like, young lads who, if they get fully fitness and reach their potential, the idea behind the squad we're putting together is it could do well in the Championship, or at least hold its own in the league above. Obviously, you've got to get there first, but it's nice to have a plan and a bit forward thinking. Like, I think it was last summer's transfer deadline day, we signed a 35-year-old Danny Graham who'd already fielded at the club once, and fast forward a year later, still in League One, on transfer deadline day, we signed two young lads, 21 and 22, I think, from Bayern Munich on loan with the option to buy at the end of the season. So it just shows the direction the club are heading in. And obviously nothing changes unless you get promoted. You still need to get out this league. You can do everything off the pitch, but you can do all sorts off the pitch you want, but you need to win games to get out of this league. So I know better than anyone supporting Sunderland, I could be looking back on this podcast in May and be turning it off at this exact moment because we haven't got promoted. But I will say it does feel a bit different this year. Obviously, and it's only been six games or whatever, and it's a long old season in League One. But I think, no, I didn't actually realise this, but we're joined top of the league at the minute, but for a few weeks, we were top of the league a few weeks ago. And I didn't realise this is the first time we've ever been top of the league in League One since we've came down. So that's 4 years in this league with the biggest budget, the biggest expectation, the biggest fan base, and we haven't been top of the league. So I think it was mad when I found that out. But it does have a different feel to it. So hopefully we'll get out this league and then see what the owners, the manager and the players can do when there's maybe a bit less expectancy on them in the Championship.
And now, before we come on to the current state of the team and start talking about some more topical affairs when it comes to Sunderland, we're going to take one very quick break. And we're back. So, it's been two near misses in the playoffs within 3 years. It's got to be tough for a fan. Why weren't the side able to get over the line and win promotion?
Thinking back to the first field playoff attempt, which is a sad statement, we got Portsmouth in the semi-final, who we'd sort of formed a rivalry with, if you like. So that felt like a big hurdle from the start. I'm pretty sure we'd lost to them and drew with them in the league prior, so that was hard. We overcame that. Great goal by Chris Maguire. It took a lot out of the players, but we got there, we got to Wembley. And then I remember the day after, it was Doncaster Charlton to see who we were about to play, and the feeling amongst the fan base was we don't want Charlton, because Charlton at the time, if I remember rightly, were absolutely flying. They finished third, but they sort of came out of nowhere and just like bossed the end of the season. So they had all the momentum, they had good players, they had a great spine of the team. They had the lad who scored the goal against us, I think it was Bauer, centre back. They had good midfielders. I think a lad, Cullen, on loan from West Ham, was clearly a cut above League One. And they had Lyle Taylor up front, who, it wouldn't be Sunderland if there wasn't a narrative. Apparently, in the summer, when we went down to League One, Lyle Taylor came to Stadium of Light. We were looking to sign him, and then the rumours are that he, obviously, the talks were ongoing, so he had to stay in a hotel, and he wanted Sunderland to pay for his hotel, put him up for the night, and we told him he had to pay, and he apparently left and ended up signing for Charlton. How much of that is true is another question, but with it being Sunderland, I wouldn't put it. I wouldn't put it past us. But so no, he was playing, and he was he straight away went to the Championship after as well. So he was a cut above. But so Charlton were playing Doncaster in the semi final, and it went to penalties. And you were sort of watching it, thinking like you were never going to take a game for granted. But I just remember thinking, if Doncaster win this, I fancy us a hell of a lot in the final, because no disrespect to Doncaster, but they probably wouldn't sell out their end of Wembley. It would be all the Sunderland fans, all the atmosphere. I'm pretty sure we'd beat them twice in the league, and they weren't as good as Charlton. So I remember thinking, please. But then John Marquis, who was the centre forward for Doncaster, he's now at Portsmouth, he was in great form that season. He was one of the top scorers in the league. Missed a penalty, I think, to win it. And then Charlton went on to win, so you were sort of, not deflated, but you're watching them celebrate thinking, Doncaster definitely would have been the lesser of two evils there. But sort of on the day, we were terrible at Wembley. It was weird. It was like the players didn't turn up, and we had a winger on loan from Celtic at the time, Lewis Morgan, and he was on the bench, and Max Power got injured 2 minutes into the game, and Lewis Morgan came on, and since then he's been on I can't remember what podcast it is, but he's been on a football podcast since, and he was asked about it, and he was just sort of casually sitting there laughing, saying, yeah, we weren't really up for the game, the gaffer never got us up for the players weren't really feeling it, whatever, which is extremely disappointing from a fan's point of view when, you know, you've got 40,000 people have went to London from the northeast to support the team when a month before or 2 months before they were in London spending God knows how much on the Checker Trade Trophy. So people were saving up money to go travelling to support their team, and you've got a young lad coming off the bench in front of 80,000 people saying he couldn't really get up for the game. So that's disappointing. But no, I think you want to say things when didn't go our way, but sometimes you can just not turn up on the day and be beaten by the better team. I mean, I know you've seen the documentary. Charlton genuinely kicked the ball into their own net to put us 1-0 up, and we still lost the game in 90 minutes deservedly. So I think that tells you everything you need to know about the playoff final, really. The other near miss, obviously, was the season just gone. We got to Lincoln. We got Lincoln in the semi-final, and it was just a bit of a disaster in the first leg down at Lincoln. I can't remember their first goal, but the second goal was just a horrific one where player passes it back to Tom Flanagan, passes it back to keeper, and it's a bit short, and Bird sort of hesitated for a set and then whacks it straight off their centre forward into the net. So you're down 2-0 going back to Stadium of Light. But I think it sums up our fan base. That was the first game fans could go back to. So I think there was 10,000 Sunderland fans. And I wasn't at the game, but me mate was. And he just, I didn't even need him to tell us. The noise from like the TV was immense of us trying to roar our team on. And we scored 2-0, got back into it, and then conceded from a corner right after half time, and then couldn't find the goal. So that did feel like a near miss. If you want to call it unlucky, or you've got yourself to blame because of the goals in the first leg, it's a bit of both. But I think this season we've just got to look to just get automatic promotion. I know that's always been the goal, but you can be the best team. You can be the third best team in the league by far and get beat on the day to the sixth place team who've just scraped it because they're more enthusiastic, they're happier to be there than you. They've got a small ground that suffocates you, the players and the noises. So I think you do get the feeling being a Sunderland fan, if we are to get promoted, it will be automatic. So you just get the feeling the playoffs isn't for us. I guess time will tell, but you'd like to think it's one of those where you're close every year and then 1 year everything just clicks and you just walk the league. And I'd love that to be this year, but only time will tell. All I do know is it won't be plain sailing and straightforward because it's Sunderland Football Club. So we'll have to see.
And how did you feel about the EFL trophy win? I don't know if it's... is it the Papa John's trophy or Checker Trade trophy now? I think Papa John's. But anyway, the EFL trophy. Some fans might smirk at it. Some fans might look down the noses at it, especially them ones from the Premier League because they just don't understand lower league football, I think. But you're in the lower leagues now. That's where you are. And there's nothing wrong with winning a trophy. Day out at Wembley. Well, I think in this case, actually, maybe not day out because of the coronavirus. But won a trophy nonetheless. And I think personally, I'd be celebrating it if my club had won it. What did you make of it? How did you feel about winning the EFL trophy?
Again, because it's Sunderland, it was done in weird fashion. It's the first. It was the 1 year in football that we couldn't go to games. So, of course, the one time none of our fans can go to Wembley, we win at Wembley. I believe we'd lost seven or eight times in a row at Wembley before that, in front of fans. And then the one time no one can go, we win. But no, it was properly celebrated by me and a few of my mates watching. You know, you've just seen your team win at Wembley, if there's no fans there, or it doesn't matter if there's no fans there or what they're playing for, it's a final. And you're seeing them lift a trophy. I'd never seen that. A large majority of our fan base had never seen that. So I don't think it wasn't as celebrated as if we'd say won the FA Cup or something, but it wasn't like everyone had a good night, do you know what I mean? And at the time, we were looking to get promoted, so winning a trophy with 2 months left of the season or whatever, it makes you feel good as a fan. It makes you think we can do this, we can win things, we can get over the line. So no, I was buzzing for the lads, for the manager. You had players like Grant Leadbitter lifting a trophy, lifelong Sunderland lad, local lad. He's been through all sorts in his life, mental health problems, with both of his parents dying, and he's standing there lifting a trophy at Wembley in a Sunderland kit. So no, it was great. It was a great day. It was great to see, really.
And how would you sum up the performance of Lee Johnson so far, after coming in last December, finishing fourth, falling short in the playoffs again, winning a trophy? What do you make of him in terms of the style of play and the performances and the results? I mean, how good a job do you think he's been doing?
I like Lee Johnson. People are still a bit not like divided, as in the one amount. I think he's still got a bit to prove to people. I think the start of the season has definitely got a lot more people on side, because we are getting to see sort of an identity. We're playing good football. We've got young lads coming through. He's apparently really excellent at managing young players. Like, we've got a lad in centre midfield, Dan Neil, who's 19, local lad. He's been unbelievable this season. He scored a great goal the other week. He's taking the ball on the turn in centre midfield and playing it through the line, and it's exactly what you want to see. So no, I like Lee Johnson. It was hard for him coming in when he did last year, because I'm not Phil Partington's biggest fan at all. I think Phil Partington left him with an aging squad, a defensive squad, an unhappy squad. So I'm not going to lie and say it's all been rosy. The games before the playoffs, I believe we didn't win in five or something. And people were questioning Lee Johnson. But I think we've just got to give him this season. Obviously, it's his first proper transfer window and full season with the squad, so you've got to see how he gets on. And if you take the first six games, joined top of the league and only lost one game, and in the game we lost, we were very unlucky to lose. If it stays like that, we'll get promoted. So you've just got to look back and see, take it in stages, look back at Christmas, see how he's getting on, and look back at the end of the season. But from what he's had to deal with coming in, with the players and the change of ownership and everything, I think he's done a solid job, Lee Johnson, and I like him as a manager. He speaks well, he's honest in his interviews. He's one of those managers who, you know, if you've sat and watched your team play crap, he'll come out in the interview and he won't say, oh, there's positives. He'll say, look, we know it wasn't good enough, we'll improve. Which is sometimes, as a fan, you just want a bit of honesty. So I like Lee Johnson.
Who have been the sort of key players in the last few years since you've been down there in League One? From an outsider, I like Lyndon Gooch, the American kid. Whenever I watch him, I feel like he always does good. And I'm over the moon to see Aidan McGeady still out there doing his thing. I mean, it looks like he's, in terms of numbers, it looks like he's doing a good job, and he must be getting up there now. Who've been, in terms of, in your opinion, who've been the players that you put the most trust in during this spell?
Well, it's weird, because thinking about it, it's only the fourth season in League One, and I say only, it feels like it's been 10 years, but we've had quite a turnover of players. There's not many players who've been here since that first season. Obviously, you mentioned two, McGeady and Gooch. You've got Luke 09. I'm probably missing a glaring one, but we haven't really had that core, do you know what I mean? It's sort of been, we either had players who were too good for League One that got snapped up, like Josh Madger, or we've signed players, League One players, and it hasn't really worked, like your Max Powers and Charlie Wykes and stuff. So, but Gooch has been in the academy since he was at Bern, so it's always nice to see players like that do well. He does get a bit frustrating, Gooch, because, like you say, from an outsider, you know the talent's there, but he's one of those players where he'll either be a 10 out of 10, unbelievable, or you'll not really notice him. But obviously, McGeady's got that star quality, isn't it? It's a shame he's, what, 36, 37-year-old now. But he's still, like, when McGeady gets the ball one-on-one against his defender, you sit forward, you know what I mean?
And the only important question, do you think that this year could be the year that you finally get automatic promotion or win a playoff final and get back up into the Championship?
I'll say yes, because I've said it before and it came out about it, so. But it's a long, long season in League One, do you know what I mean? Sort of, the first season in League One, Luton won the league. And I think I'm right in saying they weren't even anywhere near it until about January, and then they just flew. So it's one of those where you don't want to peak too early, and yeah, we're playing well, but with the players we've got, a lot of fans will say we're not actually at our best. Like, there's glimpses of what Lee Johnson's trying to do, sort of good passing moves, but I think it's obviously consistency, and like most fans will tell you, we're going to go through dips, do you know what I mean? We're not going to win every single game in League One. We might go five games without a win. But I think it's important how we react and how the management, the manager and the lads do with sort of pressure. Because like I say, the Stadium Light's a great place to be at the minute. 30,000 people in League One. But if we suddenly go five home games without a win and it's a bit restless, you're hoping everyone can keep calm because, like, look at the table now. We've got the players and we've got the attributes to do it. So hopefully they can just pull it off. But I'm going to say yeah, because like I said earlier, it does have a slightly different feel about it this year.
Let's hope so. Let's be optimistic. Let's be positive. Now, before we come on to a couple of questions from our Twitter fans, we're going to take a very quick break. And we're back. So we do have a couple of questions from a fan called Gav on Twitter that we're going to put to you now.
You've got mail.
First one is pretty much a repeat of what I just said. Will we go up this season?
Oh, God. Yes. Go on, then.
Yes. Yes, you will. And secondly, how do we fit Broadhead into the side?
I think that's been asked because we played Wigan away last night in the Cup and he scored a goal and he looked really good. I think it was what I was saying earlier. Gooch has been a bit inconsistent for a few weeks now, so I'm not necessarily saying, like, get him out of the team, do you know what I mean? I think with the amount of games you play this year, everyone's going to play a part, so I would maybe like to see Broadhead out wide, because he's a striker, but he's sort of a bit quick, so you know why you play him out wide. But I'm quite a fan of, like, a secondary striker being out wide, because I like sort of their instinct getting in at the back stick and stuff. So I think I'd like to see Broadhead maybe start a game out wide for either Gooch or McGeady, see what he can do in the league.
Okay, well, before we finish off and get you out of here then, Sam, we're going to finish with our little quiz that we always like to do with every guest called Do You Know Your Heroes? Don't worry too much about these. They tend to be quite ridiculous and quite difficult. So that's kind of the meme. So don't worry about it if you don't know any of them. But we'll see how we get on. I think you'll know a couple of them for sure. Some of them aren't too bad.
I forgot to do research, I'm not going to lie. I Googled one question and I'm not even going to lie. I've instantly forgot the answer.
Don't worry. We'll see how we go. So the first question is, how many top flight titles have Sunderland won in their history?
I'm pretty sure I know this one. Six.
Correct. It is six. Question number two. Who remains the club's record appearance holder?
Oh. Are you allowed to give clues or not?
Yeah, I'll give you one clue. This is sort of... It's not ancient history, but it's 60s, 70s.
See, I'm trying to work out, because obviously I haven't got a clue, but there's players I know from that era, obviously, who won the Cup and stuff. Do you know if he's a goalkeeper, or do you not know?
I do not know. I just have the name and is the number.
Is it Jimmy Montgomery?
Very good. See, I told actually? You. Yeah, it is. You should believe in yourself. You know these. Jimmy Montgomery made 627 appearances between 1960 and 1977. Crazy. Next one is it even further in the past?
Oh, good.
Who is the club's record goal scorer in competitive matches?
Right. I actually think I know this because, you know, during the first lockdown when you were doing a quiz every week, me and the lads did one, and
yeah.
I thought it was Rach Carter, but I'm pretty sure it's a... I don't know who it is. Is it Bob? Oh, is it Gurney or something?
Yes, Gurley. Very good. Bobby Gurney.
I literally know that from a quiz answer, and all the lads were like, oh, we don't know who that is.
See, so we're three for three so far. You're doing better than most.
Oh.
Bobby Gurney, 228 goals between 1925 and 1950. Oh, long career. Now we're getting to a little bit more modern-day stuff. On which player did the club spend its current record transfer fee?
Oh, I don't actually... Oh. I'm trying to think because there's names going around my head, but... I'm trying to think when we were... It was obviously last when we were in the Premier League. And I remember was... It might be Ndong, but I don't know if... I'm going to go with Ndong, but he's either just below or just above our record signing. So I'm going to say Didier Ndong.
It is Didier Ndong, 4 for 4. Signed from Lorient for £13.6 million. I read... an article on the Roker Report the other day, actually, about like just the 10 worst, you know, most ridiculous.
Oh, was he in there?
And he was in there, yeah. Yeah. Just you haven't had much luck with some of these signings, have you? But in happier news, what is the club's record transfer fee received? From which person?
It's one of the Jordans.
It is.
Is it Pickford?
It is Jordan Pickford, £30 million to Everton. Obviously, it's never nice to lose such a good player, and I think a local lad, right? Pickford is he's a.
Oh yeah, he loves it. Every time he plays at St James, as he gets himself into bother because he's just the emotions take the better on him. But yeah, he's a
so
local lad.
It's never nice, obviously, but to make £30 million doing good business, it's a lot better than the Ndong story, I think. So.
Oh yeah.
Anyway. Now we're getting on to really recent history. Who scored the most goals for the club last season in all competitions?
Charlie White.
Do you know how many?
Oh, it was 30. Is it something like 32?
Oh, so close. 31.
Oh,
goals in 53 games in League and Cup. But Charlie White was the correct answer, so we are 6 for 6. You had nothing to worry about. On the other hand, who provided the most assists for the club last season in League One, in the league?
McGeady.
Very good. Do you know how many?
Oh, I don't. I know it was impressive because he didn't even play half the season. I couldn't tell you. Was it like 13 or something?
Very close. 16 assists in 31 matches. Very impressive. Only 31. 16 in 31. Unbelievable.
That's mental, isn't it? Considering that I think he started playing again in January and he was barely up to speed.
Yeah, that is impressive. Now, you worried about doing this quiz with no research. We've never had an 8 out of 8. This question to be the first person to get all 8 correct.
Oh.
Apart from England, which nationality is best represented in the current Sunderland first team squad?
Apart from England.
Obviously, the majority of the players are from England, and then you've got a few from some different places. But there's one country that's got is the second most represented. This always stumbles them. No one ever gets this.
I'm trying to think because we've got McGeady, who's Irish, Ross Stewart, who's Scottish, but everyone else is pretty much. Oh, we've just signed the two German lads. But I don't think we've got any other German players. But we've got two Northern Irish as well, Flanagan and Evans. Oh. Is there one more than anything else, or is it like a tie?
Well, according to this, there's three of this one, and it's one of the ones you mentioned.
I'm trying to think.
According to my research on Wikipedia, assuming that this is all above board, there's...
This is going to drive us insane when I find out.
There's three in the squad and one out on loan from this country.
Three in, so there's four altogether, or is the third one out on loan?
No, there's four altogether. One's on loan, and there's three in the current first team squad, according to Wikipedia, from this country.
Is it? I think I know it's Northern Ireland now because of Will Grigg.
Northern Ireland. Eight out of eight. That's the first time.
Who's the third player?
So apparently it's Captain Corey Evans, Tom Flanagan, and Carl Winchester.
Oh, I didn't know he was Northern Irish. There I mean, go. I've listened to his interviews and he very much is, but I didn't think. To be fair, I think he gave us a bit of a nudge as soon as he said on loan.
Well, either way, we're still gonna count it. Little nudges here and there are all good, but that's eight out of eight. So definitely, it seems like you're worried over nothing.
I'm pleased I didn't do any research because I probably would have researched all the wrong things and just records against Newcastle and stuff.
Well, Sam, it's been an absolute pleasure going down memory lane with you. Before we go, do you want to tell the listeners where they can listen to you or read your stuff?
Yeah, it's just a report. It's a fanzine. There's great articles on the website. We've got really good writers. They do player ratings straight after the game, talking points, and we've got the podcast, Roker Rapport. You've got my favourite is the pubcast we do straight after the game. It's like, you know, when you go to the pub after the game, talking with your mates over a pint about what happened, and someone puts a microphone on, and then we'll get good guests on, ex-Sunderland players. Recently we've had Vinnie Jones on. So, it's Roker Report, and it's Sunderland's best fanzine, I'm going
to
say.
Lovely stuff. Well, I urge the listeners to check that out straight away, as I will be doing myself, especially that pubcast. That does sound good. But with that being said, thanks so much for joining us today, Sam. Good luck with the season, and hopefully I'll catch you down the line.
No, thanks a lot. Really enjoyed it. It's nice to... I went into this thinking it was going to be all doom and gloom, but it's nice to reminisce about happy times as well.
Good times. Good times and bad on the Sporticos Football Stories podcast. Okay, Sam, thanks a lot, buddy. Catch you later.
Cheers, mate. See you later.
Thank you so much for listening to the Sporticos Football Stories podcast. Please like, share and leave positive reviews wherever you listen. We really, really appreciate that. Also, if you enjoyed today's episode, please tell a friend online or offline. That really helps a small podcast like ours to organically grow. Also, head to sporticos.com for live streams, data, statistics and much more from the world of football. You can follow us on Twitter at sporticos.com. You can follow myself at Craig Sporticos. And we would also love to read out the thoughts and questions of our listeners, so please feel free to tweet those to me anytime or send us an email to show@sporticos.com with your opinions or your questions, and we'll get to them on the next episode. Thanks again so much to Sam for joining us today. Thanks to you for listening, and see you on the next episode of the Sporticos Football Stories podcast.
Network. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.